Spin Rate presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. That's right, this is Spin Rate, the Athletics Toronto Blue Jays podcast. My name is Drew Fairservice. We are so glad to have you listening here after another productive, I guess, weekend of Blue Jays baseball, winning the games that they need to win. I don't know about anybody else who's listening to this, but even taking two of three feels a little dicey right now. There's that sense, even though the Blue Jays are in a good position, that they've got to win every game. But that's not realistic. That's not baseball. And that's why we bring in the most realistic Blue Jays reporter, writer, columnist around. She is the co-host of Spin Rate. Her name is Caitlin McGrath. She works for The Athletic. Caitlin, how are you?
I'm good. It's busy weekend again. I feel like they're all blurring into one another because I feel like they're all kind of becoming the same. The Blue Jays just win now. They consistently win. But this was an exciting weekend, having the Twins in town, the first time we're seeing the Twins. What a weird scheduling quirk that the first time we're seeing the Twins is this week, and then next week the Blue Jays immediately go to Minnesota and play them again. Seven games against the Twins in the final 2 weeks. But obviously,
very odd. Same with the Tigers, right? Like, it doesn't feel – I don't know if – it's just another black mark against the unbalanced schedule, if you asked me, but – I've interrupted your train of thought.
I was just going to say it's always interesting when, like, you know, former players, especially ones as popular as Josh Donaldson, come back. And obviously, I know we're going to talk about him a little bit today, but the reception that he got throughout the weekend, fans, you know, still very much appreciate what Josh did when he was a Blue Jay. And it was, interesting to have him back. I've been at the games a few times when he's come back, previously with the Braves and now with the Twins. And this one was interesting because a lot of talk or a lot of people, I should say, a lot of the media were really interested to talk to Josh Donaldson just because of the things that are happening, the things that are trending with the current Blue Jays right now and how they are so reminiscent of things that were happening in 2015 when he was on the team. So, yeah, it was a very kind of interesting time for him to be back in Toronto, I thought.
Absolutely, and he's a beloved figure in Toronto Blue Jays history, which is something, as you said, I think that we're going to have to get into, and I don't want to waste any time getting into that. But before I do get into that, before we do dive into this weekend that was, where it's like you said, the Blue Jays just win now, but there's also like a million storylines going on because of the importance of the games. And like, as I said, like, this is two Fridays in a row that they've lost. And then it's like, oh boy, they lost the Friday game. Now they got to win two in a row if they want to win this series. And in the last week's case, it was three in a row, but they've done it. But at the same time, there's just so many kind of threads to unravel. But before we get into that, I want to keep the thread of self-promotion and housekeeping going through the beginning part of the show, as we do every week, which we do, of course, Spin Right Here twice a week, which, if you want to listen to this show, if you are just coming back around to the Blue Jays as they're making this rush to the postseason, welcome. We're glad to have you here on the Athletics Toronto Blue Jays podcast. We want you to subscribe. We do two of these a week, and the Blue Jays are playing lots of baseball games. They don't have an off day until when? Next week, right?
Next Monday.
So they are playing seven games in 7 days. So this is the time to get in, to subscribe to Spin Rate, to head over to wherever you get your podcast, if it's Spotify or Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or anywhere like that. Hit us with the subscription, hit us with the like, the thumbs up, the review. Do all the things that you can do to help get our show in front of people who might be interesting and looking, because that's, it's the name of the game here. Speaking of the name of the game is The Athletic, and we want you to subscribe to read all of the amazing things that Caitlin is reading, read what Lindsay's writing about the Yankees, read what Jen McCaffrey's writing about the Red Sox. You want to know what's going on in the American League wild card chase? There's no better place to do it than The Athletic. There's no better place to get hooked up than at theathletic.com/spinrate. Subscribe to the Athletic if you haven't already. Become one of the thousands upon thousands across the world who subscribe to The Athletic. They'll give you a tidy discount, and you will let them know that we sent you, which means a lot to me personally, as someone who doesn't, you know, work for The Athletic technically. But here we are. I mean, I do. We do this because we love it, but also for other reasons. But here we But here we go. Anyway, well, you know, I get paid to do this. I'm not going to lie.
Like, yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Athletic sends you a check. I feel like that's They do.
I don't have an Athletic email address. I don't have a blue check. I can't like weasel my way in that way. I haven't figured out a way yet, but
You don't have the Athletic swag that I have.
No, you've got cool shirts and like bags and stuff. I don't have any of that stuff, but that's okay.
I'll get you a shirt. I'll get you a shirt.
Hit me up. Send it up here to bloody Orangeville where I live. The Toronto Blue Jays. Well, what I wanted to do is, I said there are so many threads to unravel any given weekend, especially, you know, a series that kind of went to plan. Blue Jays take 2 of 3 from Minnesota. They get a really great pitching performance from Jose Berríos. They had some nice bullpen performances. They scored a bunch of runs in a hurry to kind of put the Sunday game on ice early, which was nice. Got a bit of a scare, I think. Maybe is that fair to say? A scare on Saturday afternoon in terms of not really getting any kind of offense going. What was his name? Brad Obie? He came in pitching really well, like not walking. I think I looked. He had 36 strikeouts, 3 walks in his previous like 7 starts, which is, that's pretty daunting. And you got a huge dude, doesn't throw too hard. But of all these threads, I want to do, we're just going to go name by name. I've written down some names, some things, and some people we can talk about, some storylines we can pick up. And as you mentioned, the first name on the list, as luck would have it, Josh Donaldson. So quite a weekend, culminating with a very interesting and quite a delightful scene with Josh Donaldson and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. swapping jerseys at home plate. Something you might see more typically in an international soccer or even just like club games, but not that often. But just really cool. They both signed autographs, and I think there was I don't know who had the quote. They were saying that Vlad had, I don't know, it might have been post game. Vlad said something about Donaldson, just said, "Keep going, keep doing your thing, and keep at it." And just obviously a lot of mutual respect between those two great players, but also between Donaldson and the Blue Jays fans. As you said, this wasn't his first time back, but got a great ovation, doffed his cap, and then he hit a bunch of home runs. He really, really played well, as he's continued to do all this week or all this season, his whole career. Man, as a late bloomer, Josh Donaldson is a great player and has been for a long time, as Blue Jays fans know so well. But what are your thoughts? Again, you kind of touched on it a little bit. What do you think about, Josh Donaldson killing the Blue Jays on Friday, and then, but also continuing to kill them, but seeming to have a lot of affinity for Toronto, you know, even after his departure with maybe a little bit acrimonious between the front office and he.
Yeah, I remember when he came back with the Braves, and that was a much bigger deal because it was his first time back. And obviously that was like pre-COVID, so it was a bigger crowd. Or actually, I mean, the Blue Jays weren't a good team that year, so I wonder how big the crowd is. But I imagine it was bigger than what was there today. Yeah, and like that was a bigger deal. And, you know, I know that that was – I remember, you know, being in a scrum with him, and he talked about sort of that being a bit of closure that he wanted, you know, to come back and sort of just close that chapter of his life. And coming back with the Twins was just different because, again, it was not his first time back. The Twins are, you know, not having a good season this year. He's having a fine year himself. I think, like you said, he's pretty consistent at this point. But, you know, there's actually quite a bit of respect, I guess, between the Twins and the Blue Jays, in the sense that, like, you have Berríos, who was with the Twins for so long, and he's, you know, obviously good friends with them. And then you had Vladdy and Josh Donaldson, you know, showing that friendship that they have together. So having Josh Donaldson back in town this weekend, it was, you know, it was kind of nice. I think the fans were just able to enjoy it because they're not two teams that are necessarily contesting with each other right now any more than just the fact that they're two teams playing against each other, but certainly not any bit of rivalry between these teams at all. So, as you said, he got standing ovations all 3 days. The first one was the one that he sort of acknowledged the most, in the sense that he took off his helmet and he looked to the crowd and, you know, did that whole thing that is, you know, customary that players do. But then the second two times he did acknowledge that, not as much as the first one, you know, probably just because he's an opponent. He doesn't want to, like, you know, steal the spotlight too much from the team, I would imagine. But, you know, he did get he did look like he really appreciated it. I think that, you know, for a player like Josh Donaldson, who he was, what he meant to Toronto, I mean, not a lot of players get to experience that, like, over their career, right? Like, he obviously won the MVP here. And when you win an MVP, you know, that's going to endear you to a fan base for a really long time. And not only that, but that MVP season also came along with propelling the Blue Jays back to the postseason after so long. And so that was such a magical year for him individually, for the team, for the city, like for everyone involved. And so I think that that gives Josh Donaldson such a unique connection that really not many players necessarily have with teams, and especially not many players have with the Toronto Blue Jays. And so, you know, it did seem like he really appreciated the crowd support and all of that. So that was cool to see.
It must be cool for Josh Donaldson to go somewhere and not be hated.
Yeah.
Because, like, everybody here loves Josh Donaldson for good reason. Again, he was an incredible player in 2015, won the MVP, incredible player in 2016, had another great season. 2017 season was a little bit obscured. He was hurt through May, and then he kind of struggled for a bit, but like he still ended the season with insane numbers if you go back and look. And especially if you look at that year, there was like the final 50 games of the year, Josh Donaldson had an 1100 OPS. He had 22 home runs in 50 games. Right, he had a 302, 410, basically 700 slugging percentage, insane, right? And then of course 2018 he was hurt and didn't play, and then it all kind of blew up a little bit. But the other thing about Josh Donaldson is trouble finds Josh Donaldson. He gets himself into a whole bunch of shit all the time. He is the guy who obviously endears himself to home fans. Obviously doesn't play any other way but the only way he knows. He is his ass. Pretty red. He is a bit of a red ass, right? But he gets saluted, and then he keeps doing his thing. And again, a guy who is in his late 30s now, or mid to late 30s, and got signed a really nice contract with Minnesota. And I don't think he or anybody in Minnesota anticipated them being so goddamn bad this year, because it's all just really gone off the rails. But just to see, it's good to see him still contributing. And again, that thing with Vlad was just really cool. And it goes back to this long-running thing that, especially if you are on my newsletter, about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. seems to be really, really well-liked around the game as well.
Yeah.
He is, if you watch, and I've written about this before, if you watch those two YouTube videos from when the Blue Jays played those YouTube games, and then he's mic'd up, he seems to be a good citizen of within the game, and he has a good sense of history, and he has a good sense of what matters, and like, There's an element of I'm not ready to say that, but the fact that they did it out at home plate after the game, not in the tunnel, it's not an accident, right? I think that it's that he's a good guy because he knows it's good to be a good guy, as well as being a genuine good guy. That those quotes or those lines that Geraldo Parra was talking about in that game against the Nats, he was like, he's a great player, but he's an even better guy. And here's Vlad asking Parra for a jersey, and he's like, yeah, I ordered it up. We'll hook you up. And just it's great to see. And it's especially because the Blue Jays did win 2 out of 3, right? It gets real easy to be like, wow, Josh Donaldson, welcome back. We love you, when he's playing for the irrelevant Twins, and all they're just kind of laying down like dogs for the Blue Jays as they chase the first playoff return in 5 years since Josh Donaldson was at his height. So a good weekend, good vibes around that over the weekend. We'll be right back with more Spin Rate, but first, check this out. Let's take another turn. I'm going to throw another name at you. The vibes are a little bit different around Hyunjin Ryu. Mm. Now, you wrote about this on Saturday. A bit of a baffler in terms of just like what's going on with Ryu. He got an extra day of rest. I think that there was some hope that was going to kind of cure what ailed him. But the Blue Jays have some questions to answer in terms of what they're going to do with Ryu from now until the end of the season, and potentially into the playoffs as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think I wrote this, and like, on the one hand, the Blue Jays are still in a pretty good spot because of just how good their starting pitching has been. Like, if we're operating with Steven Matz as, you know, the fifth starter, I mean, he's been one of the best starters in the second half in the American League. And so the Blue Jays are still in a good place overall because they've got four starters who are performing really well all at the same time, and there's not very many games left. So to cover off for Ryu right now, it's a little easier done, right? There's only a few games you really have to make up for him. But on the other hand, like, if you're the Blue Jays, it would be much better to have all five of your starters going well, and one of those starters being Hyunjin Ryu, because we've seen him be really good this year. Like in the first half, he was kind of the typical Ryu that we've come to expect. And, you know, only a couple weeks ago in New York, he looked really good. He looked, you know, it wasn't an especially long start. It was six innings, but he was pretty, you know, tough to square up. It was a scoreless outing. So you sort of thought that he almost turned the corner there. And then the last two back-to-back have been his worst starts of the season, his shortest starts of the season. And he just really hasn't been able to do anything with the baseball, right? It just looks like he's just kind of serving it up for them, as bad as that is to say. Like, he just really hasn't looked himself at all. And so that's when the questions start coming is like, is something wrong, right? Like, mm-hmm. Because with a guy like Ryu, I mean, he's, over his career, he's been so consistent. Like, he doesn't usually have these stretches where, like, something is wrong with his pitches. Like, his command has always been who he was and how he succeeds. And if you're a guy like Ryu and you are not throwing 95 or 96, you're throwing 90, it's, you know, you can't really get away with missing your spots.
Over the heart of the plate, because it's not like he's walking anybody.
No.
Right? He's not walking the ballpark and nibbling and trying to get guys to swing and miss it at junk. He's just, like you said, serving it up and missing over the fat part of the plate with stuff that's not moving and stuff that's not fooling anybody. And it's really puzzling. I keep coming back to that start in New York that you referenced, where he did throw a lot of cutters, where a pitch that hadn't really worked for him this year, that he's gone back to, he went back to in that start and got some good, really good results with it. So I guess that the question now becomes, Caitlin, with Hyunjin Ryu going on the injured list with a neck strain, quote unquote, those are my quotes. The Blue Jays general manager Ross Atkins said it was like, oh yeah, he woke up and his neck was filled with shittiness. I mean, no, that was his arm. I mean, no, his neck is hurt. But I guess that what's the question? Like, so what's left for the Blue Jays to do? Are they going to just soldier on and pretend like or act as though the rest of the season is without Hyunjin Ryu? Again, a 10-day stint if it starts retroactive to whenever he last pitched, which would have been the 17th, I guess. There is, maybe there's some time to sneak him back in and get him a start before the end of the season. I don't know. How do you think they're going to proceed depending on how this neck strain shakes out?
Yeah. So in the immediate time, his next start would have been Wednesday. And, you know, that, as we were talking about before, like that start to me was even in question. Like obviously when he came out of his last start, the line of questioning from us in the media to Charlie Montoyo was, you know, is he going to make his next start? Do you consider skipping him, giving him a breather, anything like that? And, you know, a couple hours after the start, Montoyo's not necessarily going to have the answer, and he's not going to tell us before he tells Ryu, right? So I think the start on Wednesday was in question regardless of how if he went on the IL or not. Now we know he's on the IL, so he's not making that start. So it's going to be a bullpen day. I think it's going to be, you know, the sort of straightforward thing the Blue Jays would do is just start Ross Stripling, let him go for 3-4 innings, whatever he can do, and then you build out from there. I think, you know, in celebration that they'll be playing the Rays, maybe they go for like an opener type. Like maybe they let Pearson go out there. Could Pearson pitch like an inning or two? Then you bring in Ross Stripling after, and then you're bridging it a little bit further, and then you could go to whoever is available in your bullpen that day. I think that could also work, and it wouldn't surprise me if the Blue Jays tried that, just to get a little creative. Depends on how the series goes. Depends on like sort of what the stakes are in the game and whatnot. But as you said before, I mean, pretty much every win matters at this point. So that's what they would do in the interim. So they do have some options, and like, yeah, Thomas Hatch is a potential. I think he previously just pitched for Buffalo a couple days ago, so I don't know that he'd be available like for Wednesday. But if Ryu's injury is going to extend beyond the 10 days, then yeah, perhaps then Thomas Hatch becomes an option if they don't want to take Stripling out of the bullpen role, if they want him to stay in that like long man role where he could be really useful. So, but you know, beyond that, like it is an interesting question. My thinking would be like, let's just say the Blue Jays are in a position where they, you know, clinch a playoff spot a couple days before the end of the season. So if they play really well against the Yankees in a really good position in that last series against Baltimore, and that final game doesn't necessarily matter, I think you could see Ryu get that start. And the way that it was going, he was kind of lined up. That could have been his day anyway. Mm-hmm. So that to me is a possibility. I think that if that game is especially meaningful, if they need to win that game, then you're probably bringing Robbie Ray back on short rest to win that game. But that's in a scenario where the Blue Jays, you know, are in a must-win game to push their season forward. So it's not an easy solution. And with Ryu, like, I don't know that you're going to, like, snap your fingers and find a solution with so much little time. I do think to me, like, and we'll have this conversation probably later on if they get there. But to me, like, the more interesting question is, like, do you use him in the playoffs if you get there? If you get to, like, an ALDS series, right? If you're going a mm-hmm. longer series, I mean, where does Ryu fit in that conversation? Because I don't know that he's would be especially useful from the bullpen. But he's a guy that you're paying, $40 million for the next 2 years. Like, does he not go on your playoff roster? Like, that's a really tough conversation to have, too.
I think that maybe is a bit of cover that the injured list move can give the front office if they really are looking for it, which is to say, like, we're not going to put you on the playoff roster because you are just hurt and haven't, you know, been stretched out or whatever. You need a rehab start, or and especially in the AL in those division series that are shorter series, so you have a presumably have a rotation that's lined up and set up in a way where, given that the Blue Jays have four starters that they can rely on, to bring back to 2015 again, as we often do, is the Mark Burley. Mark Burley was there in the dugout, clapping his hands and cheering and not making any of those starts. He was just there hanging out. Again, the guy who came back on short rest, as some will remember, in an attempt to get to 200 innings, and then he couldn't get out of the first, the poor bastard, against the Rays at the end of the year. But I think the Blue Jays are better with Hyunjin Ryu if he's right and he's good and capable of being what he can be. He can really baffle a lineup, as we've seen so much over the last 2 years. So hopefully, from a Blue Jays perspective, he's able to get right and come back and put many of these silly debates to bed. Let's move on to the next name, which is a very real name that is not made up. It is Mark Oscar Samanchet, because I couldn't figure out who was, like, the guy this weekend, because there were so many players who came up with timely hits. You know, even though Bo Bichette had the big hit here on Sunday, which was in the first inning, right? A 3-run home run. Marcus Semien hit his 40th home run of the season. Teoscar Hernandez hit another home run, you know, as the Blue Jays piled on some runs there on Saturday. I forgot the junior part. Mark Oscar Samanchet Jr. Lourdes Gurriel, of course, came up with some more big hits. They are firing all cylinders, and it's kind of something that we talked about before, which was, you know, when Gurriel's going, when Teoscar is going as he's gone all season, Marcus Semien is hitting for so much power. The lineup is really, really scary. So that's me kind of spreading the praise around. Who would you say, if you were thinking about who is the guy that this weekend and maybe back into the last week, who's the one guy who's like, he's been the one, he's the straw that stirs the drink, other than the really big straw that is the drink itself?
That's a good question. I can't pronounce the name you just wrote, but I agree with the sentiment around the fact that it is hard to pin down. I mean, actually, like, Lourdes Gurriel was maybe the sort of the previous couple series. Bichette really had a nice series. He had a nice game on Sunday hitting the home run. It's funny because Bichette always will insist, you know, he doesn't consider himself a home run hitter, and he's not really going up there and, you know, looking for power or anything, but he's up to like 26 home runs this year, mm-hmm. Which is a pretty nice number.
Marcus Semien has 40. Yeah. What the fuck? Sorry. That's crazy to me.
Yeah. And Teoscar Hernandez is like continuously going to be maybe the most underrated Blue Jay. This season, next season, for however long. I mean, he's, you know, he's had himself a really nice year. And it's funny because, you know, him and Vlad are going back and forth with the RBI, the team RBI lead. And like Teoscar was joking, like, that if it comes down to Vladdy winning the Triple Crown, and, you know, obviously if the game isn't super meaningful, Teoscar will, like, ask Charlie, like, hey, I can sit this day and let Vlad let Vlad get those RBIs.
That's funny.
Obviously, that would be only in the context of it not being a highly meaningful game, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. So probably talking about those last games against the Orioles, again, if the Blue Jays are in a position where those games won't matter. But it's, you know, I think that's the strength of this team, and that's what that's something that has come up a lot more recently, as the players are saying that where they credit this, or, you know, partly where they credit this offensive surge that they've been on this last month, has been the fact that no one guy feels like he has to do it. You know, like, no one guy feels like, I got to be the guy today. And, like, when they were struggling, like, Bobichette said something like, you know, you're going up there feeling like you have to hit a two-run home run with no one on base. Like, mm-hmm. that was the pressure guys were feeling when they weren't scoring runs those last couple weeks in August. And since they got out of that, the story of this offensive performance has been, you know, how 1 through 9 have been performing well. Everyone's had their moment. Everyone's had their series, their game, their inning, whatever it may be. Like, you can point to anyone on the roster right now, and they're all sort of feeling that. And they're feeling like, I don't got to be the guy today. Even Vlad, like, Vlad's been the guy so much, so often this year. But even he's saying, like, no one's feeling the pressure. Everyone knows that, you know, you're just passing the baton at this point, and it's all working. And that, to me, actually is, like, kind of how the whole team's going right now. The offense is doing it really well, but you have starting pitching outside of Ryu. Like, they're all passing the baton, right? They're doing a good job. They're building off each other. And the bullpen has really righted itself. And now Charlie's got that real good established kind of sequence that he goes to. Like, he's got that core, like, group of guys, like Richard, Simber, Meza, to Romano. And that's been really working. Obviously, Soria goes in there sometimes. He's now, I think he's on the one of the, I don't know which list.
The family emergency list, yes. I think, was the one.
There's so many lists. There's, like, the paternity list, and there's the restricted list, and there's the family emergency list. But so he wasn't around, but he's in that group as well. Sorry, I have a bit of a cough.
I'd love a shout out to Trevor Richards, by the way, who I shared a stat today. He faced four batters. He pitched an inning and a third, got four batters out. Struck out three of them. He threw five pitches in the strike zone, and he struck out three guys. But that's not, I mean, that's as an aside note, that's a shout out to Trevor Richards. But I really like the way that Charlie Montoyo, Richards seems like the guy that I don't know if trust the most. He's the guy that you see the earliest while it's still an important game. I need Richards now.
Yeah, he's the first guy out. He's really established himself as, like, the first guy out of the pen. So, like, they don't mind going to him when there's two on, or when there's, you know, two out and one on, or whatever. Like, I don't know that he's, like, the highest leverage guy, in the sense of, like, maybe the eighth inning guy, like a Meza, is handling more because the game's maybe more on the line then. But that doesn't really apply necessarily. Like, the game could be on the line at any point. And I do agree with you, like, and I actually asked Charlie about Trevor Richards today, just because, you know, I noticed two things. One is that, as you say, he's kind of continuously been the guy that they go to first. They really trust him to get out of jams and to do so pretty efficiently. And the other thing I noticed was that, you know, you mentioned him throwing, you know, a bunch of pitches, and not many were in the zone, but some of the swings on, you know, especially his changeup, are just such bad swing. Like, they're ugly swings. Like, guys do not, like, he just keeps guys off balance so well. Like, guys do not know what's coming, and they look silly. Like, and it's, even Josh Donaldson was up there, I think, and he made Josh Donaldson look really silly with a swing. And it was like, and so, yeah. And Charlie just basically said, like, that's what he does. He has the changeup. He keeps guys off balance really well. And yes, he's kind of worked himself into that high leverage role which he's been handling really well. Him and Adam Simber, they weren't maybe the flashiest trades, but I do think that they kind of low-key really helped save this season for the Blue Jays.
100%. 100%. You'd be a fool to argue that, I would say. I think that it's – they're obviously they're visually different, like the way that they throw, and Simber's approach is maybe more like the one we saw from Richards today, where, like, Simber is the kind of guy that gets you to take strikes and swing at balls, but Trevor Richards is the kind of guy who typically, and that's something I usually like about him. I love a guy like that who just often just throws the ball straight down the middle of the plate. And sometimes it's 92 and sometimes it's 81. And it's like, figure out which one it is. And if you're wrong, you're wrong and you're going to look like an idiot. But he, that wasn't who he was today, but he was still here on Sunday, but still, still super effective. More spin rate coming up right after these words from our sponsors. Jordan Romano, who while I applaud and I like the way that they use Trevor Richards and they deploy him. In sometimes you see him come out in the fifth inning, in the sixth inning, as you said, the first guy out, runners on base. Jordan Romano is a luxury in a lot of ways because he's been so good, because he's so dominant. But at the same time, sometimes I feel like, you know, there was a situation against the Yankees a few weeks back where before Nate Pearson had really kind of hit his stride, which I think we could say he's kind of in the process of doing in the bullpen. I was hope, you know, it was a 3-run lead against the Yankees, a team that looked dead, that had only scored the 1 run on that bird, 3 runs on that random Brett Gardner home run. And I was like, I'd love to see Pearson out now. You know, it's a 3-run game facing the ass end of the Yankees order. Don't see it. And then, you know, here Saturday again, there's a 4-run lead, which, you know, sometimes you think, I feel like Charlie Montoya maybe manages to the save stat a little bit too much, but then there comes Romano running out with a 4-run lead. Number one, I'll ask you about, so you wrote obviously about him, but like, how do you feel about the way that he's being used? Is it, I mean, Saturday, I was also understandable, he needed some work potentially as well, right? So it's a tough balance to strike, but how do you feel about the way that Jordan Romano is used and just the fact that he's so reliable that you can put him out there? It's like, we need, you know, this game needs to be over, so out comes Romano.
Yeah, I mean, on the one hand that Charlie has said and Romano has said, like, he's feeling really good right now and he's kind of asking for the ball a little bit. And like, there was an instance a couple games ago where like Charlie had kind of said Romano was not available, but then he was up and throwing. I think they didn't end up having to use him. But it was a scenario where like that was on Jordan saying, no, I can go. Like if you need me, I can go. And so to me, I suspect a little bit is that he's kind of asking for the ball and he wants to be in there and he wants the work and he's maybe kind of liking how he's pitching right now and doesn't want to go too many days without getting the ball. And I think part of it is asking, like, he wants to be part of those wins. I think part of it is just Montoya realizing how important these wins are, and, you know, not really wanting to get too cute at all at this time of the year. Where you can kind of see the argument of that, just also given the sort of like background of what the bullpen had gone through earlier this year and like, you know, how disastrous it would be to have, you know, Romano sitting in the bullpen and you bring in someone else and they don't get the job done. And and so I think as long as Jordan Romano is like saying he's good and saying he can take the ball. And the thing with him is he's also been pretty dominant, as you say. And I would say, I haven't looked exactly what his like pitch counts have been, but to just based on me watching, it seems like he's been pretty efficient. Like he had that couple games where he was giving up the long ball and just kind of a little blip on his season. But lately he's been pretty efficient. I know he had a walk today, but he got out of it. Hit by pitch.
I think he only threw 10 pitches today.
He did. And that was throwing to 4 guys, wasn't it? Because he did put someone on when he hit them.
Yeah. It's hard to argue with that that kind of ultimate backstop. And when he's young and he's rubber-armed and he wants to throw and he wants to be out there. And obviously, as you wrote this week, it means a little bit more to him because this is like, this is the kind of situation that he kind of grew up dreaming of. Right, to be part of the Blue Jays team, which is it's weird to think about that now. There's a whole generation of kids who grew up wanting to play for the Blue Jays, and there's two generations actually, and now guys like Jordan Romano are able to live it out. So, what do you think all this means to him? Again, you wrote this story about his origins, about his youth. Seems like a guy who's just like all in on being a Toronto Blue Jay.
Yeah, I mean, like, the story kind of touched on it. Like, his parents obviously grew up Blue Jays fans, and they were a Blue Jays family. Like, they went to games when he was a kid, and, you know, he remembers going down and running on the field for Junior Jays days. And so there's a lot of sort of, like, deeper meaning for Jordan. And I think it's funny because I wrote about it, and I think it kind of goes under the radar that he's Canadian. I think we all know it on the surface that we know he's Canadian. And, of course, at the Rogers Center when you're there. There was like a little maple leaf beside his name, so to indicate he's Canadian. And when he comes out for the ninth inning, they have a special sort of video package for him, especially where they show some of his highlights. And then it's kind of there's like a maple leaf that's kind of, I don't know, superimposed on the highlights. So they're constantly kind of showing that. So they do make a point of celebrating that he is from Canada, that he's from Markham, Ontario. He's, you know, hometown boy. But I just think that, like, more so he's just kind of looked at as like a really dominant closer for the team. And I think people mm-hmm. sort of overlook the fact that, like, he is, he totally is, but it's also really cool that he's also a Canadian. He's from, you know, not too far away. And so, yeah, I kind of just wanted to explore that. And, you know, as he said in the piece, like, he does try to soak it in and take it all in. And, you know, Jordan, I'll say, I didn't write this in the piece, it didn't make the piece, but he's done this a lot of times. Is Jordan's one of the guys that after he's done his pre-game, you know, stretch and catch and all this stuff, and all they're done all their work. Jordan's definitely one of the guys that spends a lot of time signing autographs for fans. He was out there for like, I don't even know how long, 20 minutes today, probably just signing, going just down the line, just signing autographs. So it does mean a lot to him. I think he, you know, potentially knows exactly how those kids feel in the stands that are looking at him and wanting him to, like, you know, sign a ball or sign a jersey or whatever it may be. Cause he's kind of been there. He's idolized players, you know, former Blue Jays as well. And so, yeah, it was a really fun story to work on. If you haven't read it, please read it. I talked to his parents. I talked to Jordan. I talked to his bullpen coach. And so, yeah, the piece is up. You can read all about Jordan, and how he kind of got to this place.
You of course want to subscribe to The Athletic if that's what you're going to do, if I haven't mentioned that before, which I did, but theathletic.com/spinrate if you want to read this lovely story about Jordan Romano, who making me feel so old now, because I'm thinking about, oh, he's Junior J and he's down there getting autographs from ball players, and I was like, he's down there getting Scott Downs autograph or Jason Fraser or Scott Schoenweiss, like, you know, 13-year-old. So the only thing that works in the advantage is that Jordan Mann is a little bit older than like a guy with his experience. You know, he's 28. So you know, the 2006 Blue Jays, Jordan Mann is like 13, watching one of the most underrated ball clubs in club history, won 87 games that year, with given way too many starts to to Josh Towers. Oh God, awful. Though what a great team though. 2006 Blue Jays, shout out. He was 13 years old rocking out to Slipknot when BJ Ryan comes running out of the bullpen. But anyway, go check out Caitlin's story. Now, here's a name that's on the list that is a player who does not play for the Toronto Blue Jays, but his name is now has been linked closely to the Toronto Blue Jays for the last however long, because we have not really talked a lot about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. so far. Mostly by design, as I've been trying to dancing around it, waiting to get us here, which is the name on the list is Shohei Ohtani. Shohei Ohtani pitched today, Sunday, for the Los Angeles Angels against the Oakland A's, who are a team with playoff aspirations just behind the Blue Jays, Yankees, Red Sox kind of hydra or whatever you want to call it, a triceratops, three-headed beast. And Shohei Ohtani threw 8 innings. He gave up 2 runs. He struck out 10 batters. But he's not the guy that people are talking about. The MVP debate has grown. And there is a debate because Vladimir Guerrero Jr. had 3 hits today. He hit his 46th home run the other day. Where are you, Caitlin, on the MVP debate vis-a-vis Vladimir Guerrero Jr. versus Shohei Ohtani as they battle atop the American League MVP race?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm like in on the debate, but I am. I'm sort of like observing the debate is maybe how I would put it. Like, I think that a lot of people, a lot of voters potentially have just already decided they're going to vote for Shohei Ohtani. And I think that's fine because I think what he's doing is incredible. Like, that has to be said, and that has to be acknowledged. What he is doing has been incredible. And I understand that he has slowed down the stretch. I understand that he's not as much as a well-rounded hitter as Vlad. But the guy is pitching Like the ace for his team. He is one of their best power hitters. He steals bases. He does a lot. And I think the numbers back up him as an MVP. And I just think like what he's doing is so cool that it deserves the acknowledgement. At the same time, I do hear how Vlad is kind of making this more of a debate or making it more of a conversation down the stretch. Yes, he's hitting, you know, as good as he's been hitting all season down the stretch here. That I think is what is making people think about it a little bit more. I think the fact that the Blue Jays are playing a lot better right now, Blue Jays are right in the mix. That to me, and I thought that this would happen. Like I thought throughout the season when we're talking about Shohei Ohtani and Vlad, and I always kind of said, like, you know, when they asked me on radio spots and even when I've written about it a little bit, I've always kind of said it's probably Shohei's, you know, race to lose. But if the Blue Jays get into the playoff spot or if Vlad is really hot or if Vlad really helps them get into a playoff spot, I think it's more of a conversation. And that's essentially what's happening right now. I still think Shohei Ohtani will win. I am sort of now thinking maybe it won't be a unanimous win. And only because I think that there's going to be some voters who are actually going to vote according to the fact that the Blue Jays are a better team than the Angels. And they're not going to be able to sort of ignore the two things of Vlad being the best hitter in baseball this season or the best hitter in the American League. Shout out Bryce Harper is also having an under-the-radar great season.
Under the radar, he's going to win the National League MVP, that's for sure.
I know, but people are not talking about it very much, maybe because the Phillies are like such kind of a mess right now. Well,
there's no substitute to having a good first half, right? Good second halves are way easier to get overlooked than a great first half, which is part of why we're still talking about why the Ohtani conversation, so many voters, like you said, have already like mentally cast their ballot because he had that great first half. If you flip Ohtani's season, like halves, I think it's an even more pitched debate right now. If Ohtani started as slow as he started being like league average for the last, you know, month or 2 months, but then finished going bananas, it would be hard for a bad team. It would be hard to see him getting the same kind of unanimous love, I think.
Yeah. And I think that Vlad will get, I actually think that if the Blue Jays get to the playoffs, and Vlad's a big reason why, which he will be, unless, you know, something happens, which I don't even think there's enough time for something to happen. I think he'll get first place votes. Like, I think, I don't know that Shohei Ohtani will be unanimous at this point. I think also if Vladdy hits 50 home runs, which is probably in the cards, there's still enough games, I think, at the clip that he's going. Mm-hmm. And certainly if he wins the Triple Crown, which I don't know how likely that is. It's just like everything has to, like, the stars have to perfectly align for him to win the Triple Crown because mm-hmm. he's kind of hovering in that zone. But it's the RBIs, I think, that he has to make up that look a little hard to do right now. He's not collecting the RBIs as much as he was before.
Which is the ultimate indictment in my mind of, A, the Triple Crown narrative, which is mm-hmm. Triple Crowns are incredible. They're so rare. And before Miguel Cabrera won his, the last one was in 1967, Carl Yastrzemski. That's a long time between things to happen, even in baseball, which is almost like a geological kind of pace. But the thing that Shohei Ohtani is doing has never happened before, ever, never, ever. Not even Babe Ruth. Get Babe Ruth's name out of your mouth. Like, Shohei Ohtani is doing things that Babe Ruth has not done. And it's the fact that if you look at the wins above replacement leaderboard, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., depending on which one you look at, if you look at Baseball Reference, he's third on his own team in wins above replacement. If you look at Fangraphs, he's number one, and his teammate is right behind him, number two. And that doesn't speak to Robbie Ray. You look at the guys that Shohei Ohtani, who pitched today and hit second and drew two walks, one was intentional. The guy hitting ahead of him was a rookie named Brandon Marsh, who has a 676 OPS. The guy hitting after him is Phil Gosselin, who has a 685 OPS. Like, the Angels are terrible. You can't fault Shohei Ohtani for the fact that the Angels are bad. If you took Shohei Ohtani, the pitcher, and moved him to and compare him to the Blue Jays starters, he's the second best starter on the Blue Jays. If you take Shohei Ohtani, the hitter, and move him to the Blue Jays, he's the second best hitter on the Blue Jays. He's having a similar season to Marcus Semien in terms of average, right? Semien's got like 10 points of average on him. Ohtani has like 30 points of on base and then like 550 points of slugging. He's got 44 home runs. He's got 23 steals. He is having an incredible season. And just because he doesn't have an 1100 OPS, just because his team is dog shit, doesn't mean that he's not having an unbelievable season for the ages that demands recognition. And it isn't that to downplay anything that Vlad's done. It doesn't, but again, if Vlad finishes one RBI behind his own teammate, Teoscar Hernandez, for the Triple Crown, or if he gets one ahead because his teammate takes a day off, does that make that somehow greater than what this other guy has done playing in a different thing, pitching to like a 330 or 325 ERA over 100 innings, over 22 starts, making 600 plate appearances as like the second or third best hitter in the American League? Like, these things are crazy that we're talking about. It's crazy to me that we're still talking about it because Vlad's having a great year. But what we talked about earlier today, who was the man this weekend? It was sort of the question that we were looking for. Who was the guy? And it was like, Bo Bichette had a big hit, and then he had another big hit. Marcus Semien had a big hit. You know, George Springer had a great at-bat. Lourdes Gurriel's had all these great at-bats. That's why the Blue Jays are in a position to get to the playoffs, not because of one guy. Guerrero is at the center of all of it. And none of it happens without Guerrero, who's on base all the time, more than Ohtani. But the Blue Jays aren't good exclusively because of Vlad, just like you can't expect Ohtani to make the Angels good all on his own. Because that said, if ever there was a guy to do it, it's the guy who is a top 25 pitcher in baseball and a top 5 hitter at the same time. To me, it's crazy. But I think you're right, and it won't be. I don't think it'll be unanimous. I thought it would, but especially if he gets 50 home runs, I think it'll be close. But I really do think that Ohtani's going to get it, and I think that he deserves it.
I think he deserves it. I think he'll get it. I think that Vlad would be happy.
Manny Ramirez won't be happy
to lose to him, because I know he's a big fan of what Shohei Ohtani's been doing. And you know, Vlad's just a happy guy. So. This is all to say that I do not have an MVP vote this year. So
no, well then, so this is you've not spoiled your ballot here on the show.
No,
so,
have rookie of the year. So
rookie of the year. Well, that'll be an interesting one in the American League, I think.
I'll have to do my research.
You know, you're gonna get. You shouldn't have said that out loud. You're gonna be getting people sending you emails. You're gonna get the Manoa heads are gonna come flying in. The last name on the list is another name that for a person who does not play for the Blue Jays, but their name is Aaron Boone. Aaron Boone is, of course, the manager of the Yankees. The Yankees are in the middle of a rough patch of years, but the last month or so have been perplexing for the Yankees fans. The Yankees, as of right now, are on the outside looking in at the playoff picture. What do you think is going to happen, Caitlin, as we come down? I know you and I talked a little bit off the air, and you made some great points about the Yankees have a really tough schedule coming home, as well as being a disaster with a lowercase d. What do you think is going to happen to this race over the next 2 weeks?
Yeah, I mean, when you looked at earlier a couple of weeks ago or whatever it was, when you looked at the Blue Jays, the Red Sox, and the Yankees, they all had like relatively manageable schedules. The Boston Red Sox had the easiest schedule. The Blue Jays were in the middle, and then the Yankees had a little bit tougher of a schedule. And it's interesting because the Yankees' schedule is getting tougher because one of the teams they face is the Blue Jays, and Blue Jays are getting better. So their record is getting better. So they are now a tougher opponent for the Yankees to play. And so the Yankees end the season against Boston, then against the Blue Jays, and then against the Rays. And so if you're the Yankees, on the one hand, you can really directly control your fate because you have these games against teams you're chasing. At the same time, that can completely backfire because if you don't handle those series, then you're giving teams you're chasing even more of a lead ahead of you. So, you know, observing the AL East the way that I have, and obviously I'm more hyper-focused on the Blue Jays, and then I kind of keep one eye on the Yankees and one eye on the Red Sox a little bit. But to me, like, just kind of following those teams, the Yankees just – outside of that 13-game stretch that they went on, I don't see that they've gotten really out of their rut much this year. Like, it feels like whatever was kind of dragging them down in April and May hasn't really gone away. Like, they're not – they're a team that was built around power, and they're not hitting for much power. I think this month has been better for them. They've hit more home runs this month, but they're not doing it consistently. They have a lot of defensive problems. They're not a good defensive team right now. Their pitching largely has been good. Garrett Cole did not have a good start today, which, like, you know, hey, Robbie Ray, I think that the Cy Young is looking better and better for him. And so the Yankees, to me, have, like, continuously baffled. And the Red Sox, as much as they are a team that we did not expect for them to be here, they still are here. And I think that's the biggest credit you can give the Red Sox, is that they have not gone away, and they've had a lot of reasons to go away. Like, they have been sort of teetering on the edge of collapse for, you know, like months now, like a couple months now. They've had kind of disaster after disaster. They've had bad losses. They've had really sloppy losses. They've had a COVID outbreak. They've just had multiple, you know, they lost they've had multiple COVID out. The most recent one saw, like, you know, quite a few players go down, and they still have been hanging around. And like I said, they have a really easy schedule. They do play the Yankees, but I think they still have a few more games against the Orioles. They finish the season against the Nationals. So they have and they're done with the Blue Jays. So they have a pretty manageable schedule. They're in a good spot right now. They can control their fate a little bit playing the Yankees if they can put some distance between themselves and the Yankees, and the Blue Jays would appreciate that if they did that. I think, you know, maybe the way that it's shaping up now, it's still a three-team race, but the way that things are trending right now, I think it's leaning in the direction of Boston and Toronto. That could change. Like, things could change so quickly in baseball, but the way that it's situated right now, you have Boston and Toronto in a wild card spot, and like you said, the Yankees looking on the outside looking in. To me, I wouldn't be surprised if the season ends that way.
I'm not a big believer in momentum, but the Yankees just aren't playing good baseball. They weren't playing good baseball when they played the Blue Jays last, when they got swept over four games at home, and they have continued to not play good baseball. They haven't slugged and hit the ball like they need to. As you mentioned, Joey Gallo got hot, and then he got hurt, and he came out of Saturday's game early, and then didn't play here on Sunday for the Yankees. Interesting fact, and I don't mean, I'm not going to share this stat that I looked up to, like, demean Lourdes Gurriel Jr., but people because of some of the trade rumors and stuff that, you know, that you and I've talked about a bunch, and then some of the way that I run my mouth a bit, people when Gurriel was going crazy and Joey Gallo was awful, people were like, you wanted to trade this Gurriel for Gallo, and I'm like, yeah, that's right, I did. Joey Gallo has more walks since he joined the Yankees at the end of July than Lourdes Gurriel has in any one season in his entire career. He's walked 32 times since he joined the Yankees, and Lourdes Gurriel has never walked more than 31 times in a season. Now, of course, he's been hurt, COVID, whatever. Doesn't make it any less the case. But the Yankees are a disaster, frankly. They're in an absolute horrible place. And the Red Sox should be, frankly, you know, by all rights, the Red Sox should have collapsed for all the reasons you said. They beat up on the Orioles. They beat the living life out of the Orioles every day. I think after today's win, they'll finish the season 12-4 so far this year against the Orioles. So they do have, what's that, three games left against the Orioles, three games left against the Yankees. The Red Sox won the season series against the Blue Jays 10-9, even though they were outscored by 30 runs in those 19 games. But I can't count the Yankees out, but they are making it harder for themselves by even just slipping back a little bit. A game and a half behind the Blue Jays with so few games to go, with a tough road. They have those games against the Blue Jays, but you put so much, as it's sort of to bring it full circle, what we talked about at the beginning, and the Blue Jays have done it, is like you put a lot of pressure on yourself to, if you got to go in and win, like sweep a series, that's hard to do. So if you're two games back and you go in and only win two out of three, you've only picked up one game. There's not that many games left. It's not early, as the saying goes. So the Yankees are in tough, but I would never count them out as much as I would like to. But it doesn't look good for the Yankees or the A's or the Mariners. It never looked good for the Mariners, and yet here we are. So Caitlin, what do you got coming up this week for us that you can tip your hand a little bit without giving away any of your super top secret story ideas or things that are coming out?
Yeah, I have a story coming out on Monday about a certain Blue Jays pitcher who is having a good season, wears tight pants, likes to grunt on the mound. Those are the only clues you get. Figure out who it is.
I will do my best. I will get out my pencil and my paper. See if I can figure it out. Well, that's exciting. Exciting. Always, there's not enough Bobby Bay content out there. So I will look forward to that. Hmm?
Yeah, I'm not in Tampa. I'm not in Tampa, but I will be going to Minnesota. So I'll be on the ground from Minnesota on Thursday. So I have not been to Minnesota. So I'll be checking off another city, another ballpark from my list. I got Baltimore done last week. I'm going to get Minnesota checked off. So that's exciting. I've never been. Twin that's cities.
Fun. I don't know. I don't think that you would eat it. But they have the thing that I always think about when I think about that ballpark is they have walleye on a stick. It's like a food concession that you can get, like fish on a stick. That'd be good. The weather will be good. I mean, if you are me, you are inclined to like love a good fall crisp. What better place to be than the Twin Cities in the end of September? Pack a thick coat.
Yeah. Pack my windbreaker.
You'll probably need more than that.
And my sweaters.
And your sweaters.
My hat. And my hat that I got from Camden Yards.
Wear your Orioles hat. And you'll be that toque. Guy wearing the hat of the team that's not even involved in the game at all. Wow. No shame. No shame whatsoever.
It's a neutral hat. You can't be more neutral than wearing an Orioles hat. They're barely, you know.
That is a fact. All right, Caitlin. Well, we look forward to reading your dispatches from Minnesota. Blue Jays have, as you said, the Rays starting Monday. And then four against the Twins. Bro, that's a lot of games against the Twins. Three against Tampa, four against the Twins. Control their own destiny. If you're the Blue Jays, you just got to keep playing like you've been playing to go. Well, our prediction was 3-3, right? We said if they go 3-3 against the Rays, then they're in. Mm-hmm. They've only got to win one of these, but it'd be nice to win two, though, at the same time, if you're the Blue Jays.
Yeah, the Rays, I think they lost a series against Detroit.
They almost got swept, I think. They had to come from behind in one of those games.
Mm-hmm.
But they did lose on Saturday and they won on Friday in extra innings. That's right. So they came from behind on that Friday game, scoring three in the ninth and then three more in the tenth to beat the Lions.
But they lost on Sunday.
And then they lost on Sunday. So some of the Blue Jays have pitched really well against Tampa, which you know is always great to see. You look at the Tampa lineup and you're like, well, of course they're pitching well. None of these guys can hit. But of course, that's not how it works, as the Tampa Bay Rays are running away with the American. But my dream of the Blue Jays coming back to win the division did not last very long. I was like, win them all, come back. But
there's just not enough runway. Like if there was like two more weeks to the season, maybe. But
yeah. Well, the Blue Jays. Hey, one thing, Blue Jays has secured a winning record with this the weekend series. Or I think they even did it before. But since we last talked, hey, way to go, the Blue Jays. Win more games than you lose. That's all you can ever really ask for. So read up on Caitlin's stories on The Athletic. Go to theathletic.com/spinrate and subscribe if you haven't already. Now is the time. Stretch, pennant drive, meaningful September content. That's what we're all in the business for. And then we'll talk to you. There'll be another episode of Spinrate coming out this week. Got to figure out a day and who we're going to talk to. I think I know who we're going to talk to. We'll figure it out. So for her, name being Caitlin McGrath. For me, my name is, of course, Drew Fairservice. We will talk to you next time on Spin Rack.